Begin after six taps. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Hey, brah. Thank you for listening to the FlixWise podcast. I'm your host, crusher of the human spirit, Lady P. No relation to Master P. My first guest enjoys surfing, hang gliding, and skydiving, all from the comfort of the internet. She also writes a film blog called Sales on Film. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Kristen Sales.
Sup?
And withering away in her metal coffin is the founder is the founder and editor of CinemaFanatics.com and the Tumblr Old Films Flickr. It's Mariah E. Gates.
Hi.
You don't have a sup?
No.
You're not gonna bro out on us?
Cowbunga.
There you go. Yeah.
Come on, bruh.
Listeners will recall that on our previous podcast, we discussed the work of Chantal Ackerman and lamented the dearth of films directed by women on the Sight and Sound list. And so for the next couple of episodes, we're going to try to ameliorate that unfortunate problem by putting a few female-helmed films up for canonization in the FlixWise favorites list. For this installment, Kristen Sales is going to tell us why she thinks Kathryn Bigelow's 1991 heist film Point Break is one of the greatest movies of all time. All right, Kristen, let's rock and roll.
All right. Oh, I'm so excited. Because I think that this is a new cult film. I think that people really love this film. And the more serious Kathryn Bigelow's career gets and the more Oscars she's nominated for, the more people realize that Point Break is her true masterpiece, I think. And I think it's just a movie that it's well made, and it's a bit of a miracle of a movie because it's so ridiculous, the plot of it is, that you think that there's no way that you could enjoy it unironically. But you can, because it's so well made, it's shot with such self-assurance. It's such a good action film. The performances are so sincere that it's hard not to just feel a lot of affection for them and for the movie as a whole. And I think it's really emblematic of Kathryn Bigelow's career and a lot of the themes and motifs and characters and situations that have sort of become her hallmark, but it's like more fun and more rewatchable than something as sort of politically serious as the films that she's done recently. So I just think that if you're looking for a really terrific American action movie from the last quarter century, you want to watch Point Break.
Okay. Okay. Can you give us a very brief synopsis? What happens in this movie?
What doesn't happen in Point Break? Okay, well, Keanu Reeves plays Johnny Utah, one of the best-named characters in ever, I'm going to say. A recent FBI Quantico graduate. He played football in college, and so he's like a quarterback, hotshot, new guy. He gets assigned to the robbery crimes division in Los Angeles. He gets hooked up with grizzled veteran Gary Busey, giving just a terrific performance. Every Gary Busey line in this movie is just solid gold. And anyway, they're investigating this this group of robbers called the ex-presidents because they wear masks of former presidents while they rob the banks, and they're like the most successful bank robbers in L.A., and they have no evidence. And Gary Busey has this theory that they are a gang of surfers, and that's why they sort of work so well together, is because they're really in tune and sync, you know, with each other, and that's why they only pull certain jobs
in sync with each other and with nature.
Yeah, and like they're you know, have like sort of a spiritual communion with each other, but then also like, yeah, with the waves, man. and all the other cops laugh at this theory. They think it's stupid, but then Keanu is like, yeah, I think let's go undercover. And then so he just sort of like goes undercover as a surfer, and they investigate. And at the same time, Keanu becomes close to the surfer called Bodie, played by the exquisite Patrick Swayze. So they become friends or whatever. Bodie's teaching him the, you know, the Zen ways of, you know, the ocean. And then eventually it turns out that, like, yeah, Bodhi is the leader of the ex-presidents, and all of his friends are the people that he goes after. So it's like, you know, the cop becomes the criminal, and the criminal becomes a cop, and they get intertwined, and it's like really bromancy. And there are just a bunch of action sequences, like surfing, and but also heists and foot chases and crazy skydives.
I was gonna say, they jump out of an airplane.
Yeah,
at one
point. No, I know. Awesome. It's a little later, and it's very like extreme sportsy, but also just like it's a romance, and they're falling in love with each other, but they also hate each other because it's like he's just so like they need to. Keanu like needs to finish the mission and get this guy, and Bodhi's just like, no, but like, you know, the surfing has revealed like your true self. You're not a cop. You're like a surfer. And Keanu just is like resisting it because he's like, no, man, I have to do this job or whatever. So long story short, I mean, yeah, it becomes a, you know, a cat and mouse game, and Keanu has to catch him. And it's so good. It's the
and
best.
I do want to quickly mention that there is, aside from the bromance,
There's a hetero romance, yes, of sorts. Keanu, sort of his in to the surfer community is with this female surfer played by Lori Petty. Yeah.
Lori Petty, who often works with female filmmakers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Lori Petty's character, of course, has a boy name, and her name is Tyler. So Keanu finds out some stuff about her background to sort of like manipulate her into accepting him into the surfer community. That's how he meets Bodhi. So they have a bit of a romance, but it's pretty like casual. And then like the more they get involved, the more he sort of like uses her to get close to him. And then their romance sort of falls by the wayside for like a long stretch in the middle of the movie, and then sort of just comes back in a sort of a cliche way at the end. But yeah, Lori Petty is awesome in the movie, in her scenes, because she's just like so strong as a performer, but her character is not as like, it's not as important. Yeah.
She's an afterthought, but it's Lori Petty.
So yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, like and this is one of the things about Point Break is that the casting is so strong in like all of the lead roles that like it really is hard to imagine anybody playing any of these roles. Like, I think if you had anybody other than Keanu and Patrick Swayze in the movie, like, it just wouldn't work, because the success of the film is like so intricately tied to their sort of like star personas and where they were at the time, and their sort of like, and their like Patrick Swayze's like physical performance, like his abilities as a dancer and like what he brings to the physicality of the role, and Keanu's sort of like androgynous, like youthful, laid back sort of thing. Like he looks sort of straight laced and clean shaven. You sort of buy him as a cop, but then he also has this like very like sort of counterculture essence and just sort of the way that he comes across, and like bringing the sort of baggage that he had from like Bill and Ted, which was so like huge at the time, and bringing that into the role, it like helps you believe that sort of like that he could be like this liminal figure that could sort of cross over between these two worlds. So the casting in the movie is excellent.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Mariah, do you like Point Break?
I do. It was probably the first Bigelow that I saw. I saw it when it was relatively new. I don't think I saw it in theaters. I also wanted to point out that if we didn't have Point Break, we wouldn't have Sugar and Spice. Like, you guys are looking at me like you've never seen Sugar and Spice.
I've never seen
Sugar
and Spice.
No, I haven't. Is that the one with the cheerleaders?
It's
the
pregnant cheerleader bank robbing
group,
and they watch Point Break in order to figure out how to rob the Piggly Wiggly, I think it is.
Okay, I think I vaguely remember.
It's a good movie.
When that movie came out.
Also directed by a woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not only that movie that's influenced by Point Break. Like, the way that heist or, you know, bank robberies have been shot have been, like, very influenced by Point Break. Like, you can't really watch a bank robbery movie like since 1991 that hasn't at least taken some of those shots from Point Break.
I must quibble with your statement about it being perfectly cast. I think Keanu Reeves is kind of unwatchable.
Oh my god, you are so wrong.
Unwatchable in this or unwatchable always?
Generally speaking, but particularly in this movie, he's so... I don't believe him at all as an FBI agent. No way that guy passed any class at Quantico, let alone made it all the way through.
Yeah, that, like, I mean, I guess
credulity, you know. It's not really a big issue in this movie. Like, there's a lot of preposterous stuff in this movie, and yeah, I guess we're all meant to just go, they're jumping out of planes and robbing banks. Who the hell cares?
Yeah, I mean, he jumps out of a plane without a chute, yeah, and he forces himself to land on Patrick. I mean, I understand where you're coming from in terms of, like, if you think about the movie in terms of, like, other FBI agent movies that you see, but I think that the movie is, like, very smart because it foregrounds his character in terms of, like, physical performance, and that's, like, really where his strength lies, like, of being, like, a former college football star. Like, that's really where he, like, his expertise is, and then getting injured and sort of being forced to, like, not go pro. So it's, like, I think basically it makes sense within the context of the movie for him to, like, have an assignment where he's putting his sort of, like, physical acumen to work rather than, like, being in a lab and, like, doing field work or, you know, things like that. Like, he's not Clarice Starling. Like, he's not going to solve, like, mysteries.
Sure.
He's basically there to, like, play touch football on the beach with these guys and, like, you know, become their friends because he comes from a world of, like, you know, like, homosocial bonding or whatever. And then he's, like, goes from each, you know, like, one sort of masculinist world in football to another, to the FBI, to another, to the police, to another, to, like, the surf gang. So it's sort of, like, within his wheelhouse about what he's doing.
Sure. But even, I don't even buy the physicality of the performance. Like, the way he throws a football, it's like he's never thrown a football before in his life. It's like that just landed on the ground in front, right, like 2 feet from your body.
All right.
But I don't know. So my feelings about this movie are complicated because I didn't see it until very recently. Mm-hmm. I think it was within the last year, and I'd heard so much about it, and I'd seen the foot chase sequence, mm-hmm, the car chase that eventually turns into a foot chase, yeah, and I was like, that is amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Like, it's one of the best foot race scenes, definitely in American action cinema. I mean, it's like, it's as good as anything that was going on in, you know, Hong Kong cinema at the same time. Because it's like Point Break coming, like, in 1991, it's like really sort of a pivotal time in terms of, like, American action cinema, like, transitioning from, like, these, like, the hard-bodied sort of, like, Stallone, Schwarzenegger type guys with giant guns to, like, a little bit of more of a fleet and athletic sort of smaller action star. You have, like, Keanu Reeves and, like, Nicolas Cage is going to come up and, mm-hmm, like, other people. But, I mean, just in terms of, like, having, like, sort of a physically a different kind of action star. So it's sort of pivotal in that way. And then also, like, just in terms of the way it's shot, like, there's less, fewer close-ups and fast editing and more Steadicam in order to, like, pick up the chase sequence and to really capture their movements and everything. So it's, I don't know. I think the quality of the action photography is sort of what sets it apart from a lot of movies at this period.
Mm-hmm. And I completely agree with that. But at the same time, it's like Bigelow doesn't know what kind of movie she's making, and that it causes a kind of discord in my head where there are these beautiful sequences and then a story that I don't care about at all. In fact, a story that kind of bugs me. And when I finally did sit down to watch it, I just felt like there was this joke that I wasn't being let in on, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the popularity of this movie astounds me. It's like, you're kidding, right? But then again, there are definitely things that I did like about the movie. So I'm very...
I think you just need to let Point Break into your heart.
I think that might be it. Yeah. What is my resistance?
I don't know.
It sounds like you don't like Keanu.
I think that is it. I think it's a movie.
It's sort of like with me and Scarlett Johansson and how when she shows up in a movie, I have a hesitation.
Yeah.
And like the first time I saw Lost in Translation, I didn't really like it because I didn't like her. And then the more I watched it, the more I got over my not liking her and enjoyed the film.
Yeah.
And I feel like there are, for some people, there's an actor that just, you have to get past your dislike of them in order to enjoy what they're in.
That could be.
So maybe if you watched it again, you'd be like, okay.
But I've seen it twice because I rewatched it because I knew we were recording. And I will say I liked it a lot better the second time. Because, and I also really came to appreciate how fantastic Patrick Swayze is in it.
He's so good.
Yeah.
He's so good. I think one of the really interesting things about Point Break is that even though it's like about, you know, self-professed adrenaline junkies, and it's very action-packed, and the action sequences are, like, very well put together. Watching it, and watching especially Swayze's performance, has, like, sort of a very calming effect. Like, it's, like, his sort of, like, zen approach to the character sort of, like, suffuses the whole movie, and even though it's, like, very, very intense, it sort of puts you at ease. Like, he puts you at ease, and watching those scenes of, you know, the surf photography, it's, like, so gorgeous, you know? It's kind of just like watching a surf documentary where it's, like, you really start to feel, like, the rhythms of, like, the sun and the waves, and you're like, wow, this is, like, really calming. And so you have, like, that going on at the same time that you have all of these, like, really, like, macho action cliches, and people are getting, you know, shot, and, like, you know, squibs bursting, and people's faces getting shot, and things like that. And you have, like, those two things at once, but then, like, every time that Patrick Swayze is on screen, you just start to feel, like, this inner calm. And it's so just, like, his performance is so powerful. It's, like, almost like a cult leader, and you start to believe, like, why Keanu in the movie would be so compelled to, like, almost follow him, even though he knows in his mind that, like, this is a bad guy doing bad things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I ever got there with him. I think maybe that's the problem, is I never bought into Bodhi's sort of bro Buddhism.
No,
ethos.
I think he's totally full of it.
Yeah.
And you come to understand that even Bodhi realizes that he's full of it, because he's always just like, man, I hate violence, and then, like, people are just getting shot right and left, and
yeah,
like, I think the more you watch it, you come to realize that it's like he is sort of like a cult leader, and the fact that he's just deceiving all of these people, he's just very, very charming at it. And so, like, within, you know, his character, he has these things that he professes and these philosophies, you know, much like his character in Roadhouse, which is he's very, like, you know, philosophical, but also just, like, essentially at his core, like, a man of violence.
Pain don't hurt.
Yeah, pain don't hurt. Pain does hurt a lot of the people in Point Break, though, when they get shot in the face. But, I mean, it's interesting, because Bodhi's, like, an interesting character, and I think Patrick Swayze just sells it 100% in his performance, because it's, like, you're never quite sure how much of his own mumbo jumbo that he believes in, or if he's conflicted about the fact that his, like, crimes has led, you know, to the death of a bunch of his friends. Does he feel conflicted about it, or does he really believe in, like, the Zen Buddhism of surfing, or is he in it for the money? Like, it's a very, like, the more you watch it, I think the more you're just like, whoa, this is, like, a pretty complex, interesting character, because maybe the first time you watch it, you're so, like, easily seduced by what he's selling that you realize, like, at the end, like, oh yeah, this guy's, like, a hardcore criminal who, like, obviously does deserve to die.
Yeah.
Because he's evil, you know?
I guess that was also part of my problem, was I didn't understand Johnny Utah's hesitation, because I never bought into his line. Maybe it's because I'm already dead inside. In fact, I know I'm dead inside, and I've come to accept that, but, so that's yet another ridiculous plot point that I'm not sure that I hold any against the movie, but it was just another element of the movie that I couldn't quite wrap my head around. Like, why he's not really buying this, is he? And I guess, do you guys, initially, when you first saw it, did you buy into his whole spiel about, you know, that we're not in this for the money, we're doing this, you know, to feel alive or whatever?
I don't know, because it's, like, so much of the movie is about subcultures.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even the certain subcultures, like, within the police, like, how they sort of treat each other. And it also, like, taps into that, like, late 80s, early 90s things where there were all of these, like, sort of weird alternative lifestyles that show up in mainstream movies as, like, being sort of a strange criminal perversion of whatever they are. Like, killer punks or killer skateboarders or like teen gangs of like, I don't know, art students or just something weird, like anything that was outside the mainstream, they would always just be like, but they're secretly a gang, you know?
Yeah, and there was so much of that new age culture in the late 80s, early 90s, where people were dropping out of like yuppiedom to go live in the desert and things like that. Like there are tons of communes that started up at that time. Mm-hmm. And I feel like part of it is with that gang is like, that's who they are. They were guys who maybe had tried to do the fast track and then became these alternate things. But in the end, everybody kind of wants money.
That's true. So.
Right. And I think that those characters believe what they're doing. They believe that they're doing it for the right reasons, at least the guys in the gang, that they probably are like, yeah, you know, this is the real way to live. And they believe that thing about the metal coffins, like people who like drive in traffic are like dead and soulless or whatever.
Yeah.
I think they believe it and they sell it by the strength of their performances. But I think it's like, as a viewer, it's like, okay, you can believe that they are authentic and not really. And you can still, there's a distinction between what the characters are saying and what the filmmaking is saying. And I think that the sort of like their ex-president's, you know, rigmarole is not meant to be taken very seriously as like political critique. It's more of just like a satire.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody thinks that they're like making a huge statement by having, you know, Ronald Reagan, you know, steal money from people.
Right.
No. A little bit though.
I mean, it's there, but I think it's also self-consciously like, I think it's a little bit more complex that it's like, I don't think the filmmakers are necessarily saying like definitively, like, look at this political statement. I think there's some complexity in the approach, because I think that even though the characters may be stupid or they may be kind of naive in their philosophical beliefs, I think the filmmaking is really smart. And I don't think for a second that Kathryn Bigelow or the screenwriters are doing anything sort of accidentally. There's a lot of self-conscious and self-referential and very like, there's like a nuanced understanding of, you know, of gender and politics and of subcultures and of, you know, how the characters are sort of like performing their roles in a lot of ways, because it is a movie about these people who are performing certain roles within certain groups, and their identities are sort of fluid and they're merging, you know, and Johnny Utah and Bodhi are sort of like merging and coming together and like learning from each other and adopting, you know, their different different identities. And so there's a lot of sort of complexity within like this very, very outwardly, like this very silly concept for a movie.
Okay. I just want to make sure we're not viewing this ironically, because I've asked people what the appeal of this film is.
I don't
is.
Watch anything ironically.
Okay, okay.
I don't believe in that.
Okay. But a lot of people I've asked have said, I think you're meant to laugh at this movie.
I think you can take it seriously and laugh at it. Yeah. I don't think that those things are mutually exclusive.
Okay.
Because I think that, and this is one of the appeals to me of Keanu Reeves as an actor, because, and this is why I like him, but it's also a reason why a lot of people have a huge problem with him, is that you can take his acting seriously on a sort of a even keel and just read everything that he's doing straight and sort of accept it like that. But then you can also enjoy the cadence of his line readings and find the humor in them. And I don't think those are mutually exclusive. Like, I think Keanu Reeves is a great actor because he does, like Nicolas Cage, he brings a unique perspective to his roles and something that is not inimitable, you know, no one else could really do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a very, very unique style, and it may not be for everyone, but it's like the choices that he makes in this movie particularly, I just have a lot of affection for them.
Okay.
Because it's just, who could do that? Who could say these lines as they're written and create like something almost like its own like little pockets of poetry the way that he reads some of these lines.
Interesting.
I don't know. I love Keanu, and I think he's fantastic in this.
Okay. I am also a big fan of Keanu.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I love him in Speed. I don't know why I love him in Speed and not in this movie, because they are very similar. Uh-huh. But
see, that's how can you? Well, this is interesting. Like, how can you think that Speed is like not an outrageous?
Right. Why? Why is that?
See, this is interesting to me because it's like Speed, a bus that's going to blow up if you don't.
Absurd.
It's patently absurd.
Of course. Of course it is. I don't.
With like the Dennis Hopper chewing the scenery.
Oh,
and
yeah. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe this movie, maybe Point Break isn't hammy enough. Maybe that's the problem.
Maybe. I think that the reason that it might be a hard movie for some people tonally is because people do play it straight in this movie. Like, Keanu plays it straight. Patrick Swayze plays it straight. Gary Busey is sort of, he's like at, you know, the top of his threshold in terms of like barely self-contained anger.
Right.
But, you know, he is a cop like trying to solve, you know, a crime. Like, he's not just like a nutball.
Right.
And I think, you know, more or less it is sort of a serious-minded action cops and robbers movie, just with a lot of sort of hysterical or theatrical elements.
I think tonally it's similar to Bullet. And that Bullet is very preposterous, and also Bullet is a character who is very zen and sort of 70s, late 60s, early 70s, sort of hippie, solving a preposterous crime.
Yeah.
They're actually really similar films, except that Bullet is considered, you know, at the time, Bullet was like what they had as action films, but it's now aged into a classic, right? You know, but I think because Point Break is still so modern, it hasn't aged into a classic the way Bullet has, but I feel like it will.
Oh, yeah. I think it's already on its way. Right now, it's at the cult classic stage. Mm-hmm. I think give it 10 years and it'll be an actual classic.
That's what I think.
Especially now that there's a remake coming out. You know you're a classic when they remake your movie.
Yeah, let's... that makes my soul sad.
Why... I mean, aside from it being completely unnecessary, is there hope for the remake? Or
I haven't seen it, so I don't want to, you know, trash the movie just before I've seen it. It just... from the trailer, it seems like they're maybe sort of focusing more on the extreme sports aspect of Point Break, which is like the definition of missing the point, because it's never about extreme sports or like just the spectacle of people doing outrageous things. Like, it's about the relationship between the two men and their pursuit of each other and how their mania and their neurosis about their chase, like, leads them to do ridiculous and extreme things. Mm-hmm. Like, they're pushing each other more towards the edge of oblivion, and that's, like, the point. So if they're able to, like, capture that aspect about it in the remake, like, it'll be at least, you know, marginally inoffensive. But it's, like, what new do you have to bring to this story? Like, what do you have to say about the relationship that these two characters like represent? That's what I would be interested to know.
Point Break was probably underestimated when it first came out.
I mean, it was a successful movie.
Well, in that critically under, like, probably dismissed, I imagine. I can't verify that.
But reviews, I think, in doing research, they were pretty good. I mean, Keanu got good reviews. People were like, oh, this is... he does something interesting with the role, and he keeps it from being, like, very ridiculous. It definitely made money. I mean, I think it was, and it was after this, actually, when Bigelow's career, after Strange Days, which was...
95.
Yeah, but that was sort of critically panned, I think, and it lost money.
I love Strange Days so much.
No, but it's been sort of like resurrected in terms of her filmography.
It was definitely a flop, though.
But it was a flop, and that's what sort of killed her career for a while, that movie. Mm-hmm. And Point Break was the opposite. It was very commercially successful. Both Keanu and Patrick Swayze were like at the height of their film careers. It was like a very zeitgeisty, very well-regarded movie. I think it's just, like I said in the beginning, it sort of, until it was sort of rediscovered as a cult classic maybe within the last 5 or 7 years, I think people didn't give it that much critical attention because it's not dealing with issues as seriously or as obviously as, you know, other Kathryn Bigelow films like Blue Steel, which is like about gender, or Strange Days, which is like about race, mm-hmm. or like, and then also like, you know, when she started to do, you know, the Hurt Locker or whatever and had her like very serious comeback. And then as soon as she won the Oscar, people were like, oh, okay, this is like a serious filmmaker. Right. And I think the sort of non-seriousness of Point Break got ignored a little bit. But I think people are sort of coming back to it.
Around.
And they're like, you know what, actually, this is a terrific movie.
Okay. Well,
I think it didn't help that when it was aired on like TV, it was on things like TBS's Movies for Guys Who Love Movies, mm-hmm. which the rest of the movies that are on Movies for Guys Who Love Movies were like Roadhouse and just preposterous movies. And it got sort of lumped in, I think, with preposterous, quote-unquote, mindless action.
Mm-hmm.
When I agree with Kristen, I think it's more than just mindless action.
Okay. What is this movie about, then? Do we, if we could summarize in one sentence, what or a couple sentences.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. It's about so much, really.
But. It is about so much. Like, there's so many elements. I think it's honestly about sort of, I mean, not to get too serious, but I think it is about sort of, like, the fluidity of, like, masculinity
okay.
in a lot of ways. And I think it's about two men who are sort of in similar but disparate worlds, but then they sort of merge. Like, the way that I think it's very helpful to think about this movie is to watch the opening credits, because the opening credits have the names of the actors sort of merging into each other, and they have the point and the break, the text coming in against the waves, and then the first scenes like intercut between Johnny Utah at Quantico and Bodhi surfing, and it's about bringing those two worlds together and merging them and like sort of developing how they're similar and different and how there's a lot of fluidity in identity. And also that, you know, bleeds into sort of like gender and sexuality, because it's like even though they're both like in very masculine spaces where they're like they're competing a lot in terms of, you know, one-upping each other, there is this like sort of undeniable homosexual undertone that I think the movie is like pretty famous for.
Okay.
So
what we should talk about, is there coded language in here that?
Yeah, I mean, okay. There is, and it's like, there's a lot of quirkers. There you go. This is some choice dialogue. I know it's hard for you, Johnny. I know you want me so bad, it's like acid in your mouth. I mean, that just says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's barely subtitled.
Yeah, I mean, it's like very. But I think
that's
why it's like one of the like text in terms of like action movie bromance, which is like a huge, like since this movie has been like a huge subgenre within the action genre, which is like two dudes who are like enemies but like sort of in love, and their chase like brings them together, and they actually have to like physically touch each other, but they're like weird about it, but then they want to, and it's like very, you know, it's very charged.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you know, the extreme sports aspect of it is like they're like that is sublimation for whatever sexual undercurrent is like happening between the two of them. It's like they have to, like the other fantastic thing that they say before they jump out of the airplane, we gonna jump or jerk off? It's basically because like Patrick Swayze is like going down and talking about like his plan or whatever to the other guys, and then Keanu is like basically like, look, let's get it over with. If we're gonna jump out of this plane, let's jump out of this plane. So there is all of this like, you know, pretty obvious in terms. It's very obvious to the viewer and it's obvious to the characters that like feats of like a physical extremity are basically just like substituted for like a sexual consummation, which is not going to happen.
Mm.
And also like just the homosocial aspect of like criminal enterprise, and you get this a lot in like heist pictures, like in film noir, like there's always like this sort of this is like a male only space, but then there's also like this a lot of this homosocial charge and eroticism that happens when you're like doing a heist together because it's like a very high stress situation that, you know, emotions are running high, and it's really like in these spaces that they can sort of like express themselves in a way that they can't otherwise.
All right. I like this movie a lot more now we've talked about that. But I think, okay, so I want to be convinced. I am someone, I feel like I want to be let in on whatever experience you guys are having as you're watching this. But I still feel like...
I think you should see it with an audience.
I think maybe that's the key.
Here in Los Angeles, the comedian Greg Proops does some shows at CineFamily sometimes. And basically he presents a movie and does... you know, like a 20-minute or 30-minute commentary comedy thing before the movie where he basically just talks about how great it is, but in a very witty and humorous way. And it really sets up the audience to look at it in a certain light. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he's doing like an audio commentary during the movie, but it really sets the scene to sort of look at it and enjoy certain aspects that might that you might not get if you're just watching it at home by yourself.
Right.
And I saw it there at CineFamily, and it was, and the audience was just so into it. You know, like all of the beats that at home you might think like, oh, this is amusing, but you wouldn't laugh out loud. They were all just like amplified. And I think if you see it with the right group of people that really sort of like get the poetry of Keanu Reeves' performance and like cheer at the sort of horrible 80s, 90s action movies cliches, and you know, they really get it. I think it's a good way to see it because it is, I think it's a fun movie to watch with other people.
Okay. One more question and then I'll put it to a vote. Catherine Bigelow is something of a prestige director, at least she's become one. Do you think that this film is the best of her filmography?
I have not seen all of her films.
Okay.
So this is based on the ones that I have seen.
Okay.
It's sort of a toss-up between... I don't like using the word best, I guess, because I think from a technical standpoint, I think The Hurt Locker is a beautifully made film.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really well-made film. In terms of, like, how many times have I watched films, I've seen Strange Days the most.
Okay.
So... my vote is Strange Days, just out of rewatchability.
But that is not Point Break.
I know. So, sorry.
Okay.
I'm sure Kristen has probably seen Point Break the most, hence her pitch.
Yeah. And again, I haven't seen all of her films either.
Yeah.
So,
which ones are you missing?
I haven't seen Near Dark or Blue Steel.
I actually think those are interesting.
Or The Weight of Water.
Okay, I've never seen
I haven't seen The Weight of Water. Near Dark is
and
very
the
good.
The Widowmaker, did she make that one?
Yeah,
she
I haven't seen that either.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen sort of like the under the radar, not as good.
I'm going to see Near Dark in October. It's going to be one of my horror movies.
Okay.
It's good. It's interesting, too, because it's like she was like very – this is something that we haven't even talked about yet, but it's like in the beginning part of her career, like I guess Strange Days and earlier, she was like essentially a genre filmmaker.
Yeah.
In all of her movies, she was always playing with genre, and it was always very conscious and always very sort of like, let's look at this aspect of this genre and sort of tweak it a little bit into something different, which is what I think makes her such an interesting filmmaker and is why these texts are sort of maybe underrated in terms of their importance or their sort of like... you know, significance, because, you know, Point Break is like we've been saying, sort of a goofy movie, but it is dealing with a lot of things within a certain genre and then sort of doing interesting things with it. I think that Point Break is the most essential Catherine Bigelow text because I think it has sort of everything more or less that she's interested in as a filmmaker. So I think it's a good place to start. And then if you identify what's going on in this movie, you can sort of look at her other movies and see like how she's tweaking notions of genre, especially action genre, notions of like sort of masculine performance within the action genre, sort of the relationship between men under pressure, like stress, extremity.
I definitely think the masculinity, her like exploration of masculinity and how it's expressed shows up in all of the ones I've seen of her films. Yeah, it shows absolutely. Up in Strange Days. It definitely shows up in The Hurt Locker. That whole movie is about masculinity under the pressures of war. Like, that's what that's about. And then in Zero Dark Thirty, even though the main character is Jessica Chastain, it's a woman dealing with what is supposedly a masculine job.
Right. It's her negotiating in there that world. Yeah. Which is a lot of, like, what Blue Steel is about, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that you have in Point Break sort of an intro to Catherine Bigelow studies, you know, if you wanted to do that. Then, and this would be the one I would that you would look to because it does feature, like, very charming performances. It is very accessible and rewatchable. I think because it's not as heavy as something like The Hurt Locker or Zero Dark Thirty, those are sort of hard to rewatch because the intensity is so extreme and they take real life as their subject, whereas I think Point Break is sort of it's more fun in a way. And so, yeah, I think that if I was going to be like, why is Catherine Bigelow an important filmmaker, I would give this movie to someone to watch first.
Okay. And I am interested in a critical reappraisal of Blue Steel if anyone wants to do that.
I need to watch that one.
Okay. Yeah, let's all watch it.
Yeah.
Jamie Lee Curtis, man.
Yeah, she's great. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously.
Okay, but I do kind of agree. I think this is that Point Break is an excellent place to start if you're new to her work.
Mm-hmm.
But I wish I could get over it. I just really wish I enjoyed the movie more than I do.
That's okay. We're not gonna. Yeah. I'm not gonna shame you for not enjoying it. I just want to like sort of evangelize for the fact that you can enjoy silly movies for how silly they are, but there are often serious things that are worth investigating. You know, below the surface. And you can enjoy text on multiple levels, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And I think that Point Break is a perfect example of a movie that is very enjoyable, and you can laugh at it and with it, but it still has, you know, important and, you know, interesting critical things to say.
Fair enough. All right, well, I think we know where the votes are going to fall, but I'm going to put it to a vote anyway. Mariah. What say you? Is it worthy? Is Point Break worthy of the FlixWise favorites list?
I say yes.
You say yes. Yeah. Kristen?
I say yeah, bro.
Yeah, bro. Totally. All right. I'm a hesitant.
It's okay. You can say no.
I can say no. Okay.
This is your podcast.
It is my podcast.
This is a safe place.
But
maybe you want to say no with an asterisk?
Yes.
Like revisit later?
Yes. Yeah. I will revisit with an audience and I will come back to it for sure.
Fair enough.
Yes.
I think that's important.
Okay.
Reassess. All right.
And that's the way we frame it. FlixWise, that is. All right, party animals. Do you think our Point Break ruling is totally bogus? Leave us a comment on our website, flixwise.com, or you can come chill out with us on Facebook at facebook.com/flixwise. Or if you just want to talk about how tubular Lori Petty is, you can come hang out with me on Twitter.
Always.
The handle is at flixwise. Lori Petty.
She is Tank Girl.
Tank Girl forever.
And a peach.
Hell yeah.
Yes. But before you do any of that, if you think this show is totally radical, you should come hang 10 over to iTunes and rate us and leave us a comment. That would just be extra bodacious. All right, I've run out of
surfing. You didn't say gnarly.
I didn't say gnarly.
Surfer slang.
If you think it's totally gnarly, also tweet at her.
Thank
you. Say totally gnarly.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Kristen, thank you so much for pitching Point Break to the list. For the list. And where can people find you on the internet?
People can find me always on Twitter at salesonfilm, also salesonfilm.tumblr.com.
All right. And Mariah, thank you so much for pitching in. And where can people find you on the internet?
Anywhere that you type in Old Films Flickr, I will be there.
All right. Awesome.
So come to your house.
I might.
Say your name three times in the mirror.
Yep. And make sure to tune in for our next installment in the female filmmaker extravaganza that we have going on. It's going to be Mariah pitching Gillian Armstrong's. Do not let me say Anderson, for God's sakes.
Gillian or Gillian?
I think it's because her name is Jill, right? People call her Jill.
I think it's Gillian.
So I think it's Gillian.
Sometimes it's Gillian and I get confused if it's Australia and who knows what they do down there.
I don't know.
So true.
Everything's the opposite.
Okay. I've been saying Gillian my whole life.
Okay. So. Anyway, it's going to be a Gillian or Gillian Armstrong's 1994 film, Little Women. Until then, there is only one possible way to end a five-frame episode. I think, shall we all, in unison,
Vaya con Dios. Adios, amigos!